Auburn. And a couple of things we found is the difficulty in finding locations. I just think it's a great idea to address this at this point. Like to put down for the record my phone number if anybody needs to call me and have experience in the past for what it's like, any retail experience that I've had zoning with Renton, with Auburn and the such. I'd be happy to answer any questions offline. So that's 425-765-2935. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. I think I saw you earlier sign up. If you haven't already, put your information on that. Great. Yeah. Terrific. Was there anybody else who was wanting to give public comment tonight?
Yes.
No, I'm having trouble talking tonight. As long as it's not on the item for our public hearing, which is the amendments to the wireless and utility regulations. Terrific. Go ahead. If you could state your name.
Yeah, I'm Wayne Seminoff, and I'm here to comment on the marijuana setbacks. And my position is that I support them. I think it's a very good idea. It gives a lot more opportunity for stores to be located in a more realistic location. Right now, the way the code is set up, there's very few viable locations that can work. And I think it'd be a wonderful thing to have them be have the setbacks reduced, because I don't see any negative impact to the city by having a 100-foot setback instead of a 1,000-foot setback from the child care centers, because they don't really impact the child care centers, actually. I'd like to speak on another item that's really not on the agenda, but I just wanted to get in the record that I have ownership interest in the Neon Arbor property, which is in a wetland buffer, and that the Chapter 90 wetland buffer recommendations are being put forth to the city. And I just wanted to make a couple suggestions for some changes to that. I did mention previously that we needed to, let me get my thoughts here. Oh, I lost my train of thought. One of the ideas was that in order to utilize the existing property there, it has there's no provision in the code to allow for grandfathering in a wetland buffer. And so I'm suggesting to the city that they put in the code change a grandfathering amendment that would allow for a use of existing properties in a wetland buffer. Right now, the house and the parking cannot be utilized in its full capacity because of the limitations of the code, which will only allow 3,000 square feet. And right now, the footprint of the utilized property is approximately 10,000 square feet. So I would ask that the code be changed to allow the grandfathering of the 10,000 square feet on the Neon Arbor property to be potentially called the disturbed area for uses that are allowed by the REU, RUE, the reasonable use exemption. I had another point I wanted to make. Jay, do you remember what the other point was? Okay. All right. Well, anyways, that's all I have to talk about.
Great.
Tonight. So.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Mr. Seminoff, if you have not already put your information on the sign-in sheet, if you could do so. Oh, you got it right there. Terrific. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jay Schla. I'm a land developer. I spent about a year and a half or so working on a reasonable use exemption on Houghton on 9th Street. We finally finished the mitigation plan with Watershed, and these new changes that we don't know what they are definitely going to affect my property. So I wanted to see in kind of what Wayne was saying on the 2A permit, if there's some way that we can get some kind of grandfather clause. I know that if I go after building permits, we'll be able to lock in some kind of grandfathering, but it's been 2 years and I just don't know what's going to go happening with this change. I'm trying to get some specifics from you guys. I don't know how it's going to affect my lot. And that's my first concern. My second concern is kind of like an echoing of what Wayne was talking about with regards to the 2A and the buffer in Chapter 90. And I wanted to see if that grandfather clause and the clause that's in the city of Redmond and city of Bellevue right now on the 2A includes office and retail. You guys only include office. Is it possible that you would include on the 2A office and retail? And that's kind of what we're dealing with now. So, I mean, it is very difficult to figure out the 10,600 feet, and you guys are only allowing 3,000 feet on the reasonable. I don't know if there's any potential on moving that 3,000 to 5,000 feet, as it says in Bellevue, or as Bellevue's doing currently. So those are my three main concerns.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Is there anybody else here tonight who did not have the opportunity to sign in but would like to give public comment on any issue not set for our public hearing?
I apologize. I'm trying to stop
it. Steve Miller.
Rock on.
Okay, great. In that case, we'll move on to the study session tonight on buffers, potential amendments to the buffers for marijuana to retail uses. And Ms. Dorian Collins.
Okay. So this is a presentation on the buffer reduction analysis that we've done. As you all are aware, the City Council adopted new regulations for marijuana retailing, processing, and production in March of last year. And then in July, the state passed new legislation that allows local jurisdictions to reduce the buffers from all of the what are classified as eligible uses or protected uses from 1,000 feet to 100 feet, other than public schools and playgrounds. And the Kirkland City Council has indicated their support for flexibility in these buffers and asked that this be something that staff look at as part of a work program for spring and summer of this year. And they also have indicated their interest in consideration of reduced buffers for from daycare centers. So this project is solely limited to amendments to reduce buffers for marijuana retail from licensed daycare centers, not the other uses. The way this is handled now with the state is that they will not issue a license if the proposed business is within 1,000 feet of any of the restricted uses noted here. So unless the local jurisdiction has reduced the buffer. So, and again, we've authorized that to be reduced from 1,000 feet down to 100 feet. And so of these, it's just the licensed daycare center use that we are looking at. And these, we have a series of maps that were included in your packets that show which parcels become eligible at the different buffer levels. And the eligible parcels are indicated by bright red or the bright light blue. So the red is commercial and the light blue is industrial. So the ones that are kind of faded are not eligible at these different buffer levels. And the dark blue parcels are the daycare properties. So the map on the screen now is the north half of the city with the existing buffer restriction. And at this level, 58 properties are eligible for marijuana retail use. If it's reduced down to 800 feet, 10 additional properties become eligible. And these are mostly in the Totem Lake Business District, which is where the bulk of the eligible properties are. And so even with this reduction, the new parcels are still within the Totem Lake Business District. At 600 feet, there are 24 new eligible parcels, all still within. But with a reduction to 400 feet from the licensed daycares, there are now 34 eligible new parcels. And there are a few in other areas, one up in Kingsgate, and then one in North Rose Hill also. 200-foot buffer, more parcels become eligible, a total of 68 new ones, and these are, there's a few in Juanita, Kingsgate, and then North Rose Hill. And at 100 feet, there are 75 additional parcels in the north part of the city that are eligible. And then looking at the south half of the city, there are 19 eligible properties, all you mentioned in the Northeast 85th Street area, one over in Houghton, the Carillon area, one east in the city. 400 feet, and for the south, southern half of the city, we only mapped 400 feet and 200 feet, or 400 and 100, because there were no changes at the other buffer levels. So at 400 feet, there are three additional, or two over current regulations, a total of three in Houghton. And with a 100-foot buffer, there are a total of seven in Houghton, and this is six over current regulations. This table was also in your packet, and it kind of summarizes the number of parcels at the different levels. You can see the total eligible today, except the 1,000-foot buffer restriction in 77, and it doubles, went all the way down to 100. Some of the conclusions that the staff drew from this analysis were that many of the new eligible parcels are also located in the Totowa Business District. In the northern half of the city, the greatest increase occurs between the 400 and 200-foot level, and in the south half is between 400 and 100. So we had identified three options that you might consider. One would be reducing the buffer from licensed daycare uses down to 100 feet as allowed under the new legislation, or to consider something in between that would be less than 1,000 but more than 100. And for example, as was mentioned in the memo, if you reduced it to 600 feet, all the new parcels would still be in the Totem Lake Business District. And at 400 feet, there would be two additional in Yarrow Bay and one each in North Rose Hill, Juanita, and Kingsgate. Another idea that was discussed was to potentially reduce the buffer to different levels in commercial and industrial areas. And the thinking there was that these daycare uses are not permitted uses in the industrial areas, and you might think that if you felt that you wanted to go somewhere in between 100 and 1,000, that there might be some rationale for having a different buffer from a use that is not a permitted use in that area. But there are some that are grandfathered in the industrial areas. And another point that we wanted to make is that there are only four total retail allocations for Kirkland. And all of those, I think in the memo we mentioned that there had been three licenses issued, and actually four have been. So all of those are used at this time. So there wouldn't be, you know, this process really just provides more flexibility for future siting of the stores, but would not result in a net increase in marijuana retail shops. And at the current time, these four licenses are tied to those locations. So unless the locations, two of them are not occupied yet, so unless those don't end up being successful, there wouldn't be a use at this time for these additional locations, but in the future there might be. So after tonight, if we get direction, then we'd be expecting to come to a public hearing in June, and then expect to take the Planning Commission recommendation to Council in July, and then
I saw Mr. Miller's hand and go first.
Curiosity, if we reduce it, doesn't really matter, 100, 200, whatever, and a marijuana facility, retail store goes in, and then somebody with a daycare wants to open up next to it, how would the city regulate that?
That wouldn't change. I mean, the daycare could choose to go in, but they would no longer be protected by whatever that buffer is. I mean, the business is allowed once it is.
And the business, could they renew their license? I mean, I'm assuming they have some kind of annual license.
Yes, unless there's problems with the license, yes, they could renew it.
So you say it would be a problem with the license?
Unless they have a problem with the license for other reasons, you know.
The daycare would be aware that the store was there.
Right. But the marijuana retail shop would not have a problem getting license renewal as long as everything else is
exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't become some kind of non-conforming
right.
Or something.
Brian, I think you.
Yeah. Given I am a big financial supporter of daycares, unfortunately, right now, I was curious if you could define daycare, because I'm assuming we're talking zero to pre-K, but it could also be adult, or it could even be, you know, doggy daycare. I just want to make sure that we're defining it.
It wouldn't be doggy daycare.
Oh.
State licensed daycares. So we're not differentiating between the number of children or the age.
So it could be adult.
No,
actually, this is child care.
Yeah, child daycare.
Yeah, that's true. It's child care.
Up to.
But they have to be state licensed.
It could be sixth grade. It could be.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure with the age limit on that. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Child care doesn't have a definition in city code.
No, but it is under the state rules. They define
state.
It.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The state licensed daycare center.
Because my question is the reason I was asking is, it's almost, in my mind, a moot point if it's just the zero to pre-K, which is like traditional child care, because they can't even leave without a guardian signing them in or out. So I'm trying to figure out what it would hurt to have only a 100-foot buffer versus
that was the thinking
not.
Of the city council.
Yeah. Okay.
Real quickly, if we could let the record reflect that Mr. Bagg arrived at 6:51. Thank you for making the trip. Yes. Kelly, thanks.
So we're using daycare and child care interchangeably?
Yes, in this case.
And then to Mike's question, if we reduce the buffer and we're allowing more parcels open for retail marijuana stores, so essentially we're allowing there will be fewer parcels available for child care and daycare.
Well, we have a total of 4 that Kirkland can have. So that's a total of 4 parcels out of our many.
Yeah, and if we follow this, and then we now have 138 parcels available. So
it doesn't restrict, well, it would restrict a new marijuana use from locating near a licensed daycare. But it wouldn't restrict the licensed daycare from where they chose to locate.
They chose not to be
right.
Close to the store.
Yeah.
I have a question on, I think you started,
go ahead.
You raised your hand prior to starting
no,
talking.
Just, go ahead.
How often does the state look at increasing the number of licenses that are available, and when is the next time that they will do that?
That's a good question. They started off with 2, then they got rid of all thresholds, and they went back to a threshold, and now they're up to 4, and we don't know when they might open it up again. It could be based on next population census or whatever. There's no rules at this point that they're considering to open up for more licenses.
Okay. There's no rules governing their rules.
Nothing in rulemaking right now.
Mr. Whitney?
I also noticed as Kelly that it says daycare as well in some of the documents, and I think that they ought to be consistent and follow the state rules, because the city of Kirkland does have a daycare center definition, and it's more than 13 people. It doesn't say whether it's children or adults. And if the state defines care one way and we have in the city code it's something else, maybe
what we were trying to do is have a larger group, because anything that is licensed would fall within this restriction.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be just, the code does have different restrictions for in-home daycare or, you know, daycare center, and this would include all of those if they're licensed.
Well, then I might suggest adding a definition, licensed daycare. It, because if you use definition in a code, because, you know, people like me look at this and we find the definition, what exactly is that? And it would be good if you're using a definition in the code to have that exact definition defined.
Or as defined by the state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if it points to it's defined by the state, then there's no confusion. And I think the predictability is valuable.
I would just like to add that daycare is no longer just for children. Adults are just put in daycare, especially that have disabilities or Alzheimer's or something else, and their spouses want a day off or something. So when we're figuring that, I want to know why would we protect the school kids, but we won't protect a daycare.
I have a couple of thoughts on this. The first one is I don't understand what the real interest or great need is to consider this at this point. The city council had a process. They went through a process. There were some compromises made. They approved the regulations. We move forward. Now, the state legislation has changed. And I understand that is one reason that we're looking at this, but there's two stores already. There's two permits. So the chances that any zoning changes right now would change, haven't created an opportunity for somebody else, is pretty minimal. So that's the first question is I don't really understand the need of why we're doing this at this particular point. The second thing was back to the state legislation. My thought as somebody that is new to the Planning Commission that was reading the staff report was that it seems like there is not a lot of creativity in the way that the state wrote the regulations for us to really meet the needs of our city on this particular issue. And what confuses me about that is that yes, these buffers are about daycares, and we should be talking about that from a logical policy standpoint. What are the impact on daycares or not? But changing these buffers also have consequences, and some of the consequences that I'm concerned about are. If we go from 1,000 to 100, you're looking at a little pocket in Finn Hill that is now eligible, a little pocket in Kingsgate that is now eligible, Juanita Woodenville Way, which would be less of a concern, a little pocket near Northeast 70th and South Kirkland, a little pocket in Northeast Point Drive near Lake Washington Boulevard on the border of the city, between the city and Bellevue. To me, 1,000 versus 1,000 to 100 seems like a lot. Again, I'm new to the commission, and I hope to gain more knowledge on this issue before we're making a recommendation to city council, and I'm open to changing that thought process. But at present time, options two or option three seem more like more reasonable approaches to me than option one, personally. But I'm very interested to hear what the public in these pocketed areas, how they would feel about this change.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue, because I was going to ask, what exposure, if any, has there been to the general public about these changes so far?
Well, that's one thing we could get your input on, too, for the public hearing. We were planning to provide notice to everyone who's commented before, all the parties of record on the earlier process. And then there would be the standard noticing to the paper, that kind of thing. But this this isn't something that we have, you know, there wouldn't be signs going up.
We also have information on the webpage, and we send notice to the neighborhood associations and a listserv that the neighborhoods and for the city business.
Okay, so at this point,
the neighborhood associations is a good way to get the message out. And then we have updated the webpage already that gave notice about tonight's meeting, too. So people who were following that would be able to understand.
So this would all be directed at the public hearing, trying to get the feedback then. I'm thinking personally that any of the locations within 500 feet to 1,000 feet of these new locations that are being opened up under this if we were to go to the 100 feet boundaries, I think you should send out notices to everybody within that radius. Personally, I mean, I think they deserve to know that this is because I think these people are under the impression that there is no chance that they're going to have a retail marijuana outlet in their immediate neighborhood, and this is going to change that. And I think they deserve to realize that before and comment on it before we consider our recommendations.
And they're not actively looking at the city website.
That's it. That's the point, you know. We need to go out and reach out and make sure they know. I think they deserve it.
Colleen and then Carter.
Okay, so other than, I'm interested in why the recommendation from staff for 100 feet. I mean, clearly the main thrust of this is to maximize sort of eligible sites for these places. And we're taking this up at the direction of council. Do you have any insight into what prompted them to give us that direction? I mean, did this come from the chamber or the downtown business district, or what might have been prompting that?
Well, I think discussions with the city council, they're very interested in looking at more flexibility throughout the city. In fact, they were behind part of the discussions of the legislature to modify the rules to allow for that flexibility, and from what we can see, there's been very little impact to daycare centers per se. That even in the neighborhoods itself, with existing operations, has been very little impact. So it was a way to increase the options and availability throughout the city, spread it around a bit. If there's additional licenses, and the impacts were seen as being fairly minimal.
I'm just saying. Going from 1,000 to 100 seems just super drastic to me, but maybe there's a place at 600 or 400. I mean, even at that 600 level, that makes 25 additional parcels, which is nearly a 50% increase in eligible parcels. You know, maybe that's reasonable or suitable. I still think that if I were a daycare and I thought that there was a marijuana dispensary, you know, or a retail location within 100 feet, it may give me pause, but just my 2 cents.
Carter?
Pardon me for joining this late, so let me just ask you. First, the 1,000 feet from a school reminds me, I think that's also true of liquor licenses. And is there?
I don't think, not anymore because of.
Not anymore?
We have grocery stores and, you know, that's retail sales.
And we could bring that response back to you.
So I was going to ask if there are daycares, anything in for liquor licenses and daycare distances.
I don't think so, but we can check on that.
I would just like to echo that I don't understand the compelling public interest for this change. There are 77 locations available for 4 licenses already at current, and it seems like that's quite a few locations right there, and then to double that, I just don't understand the public interest for doing it. I understand why the retailer would want that. That's not what we're here for.
Mr. Pruitt.
Just briefly, something else I was interested in when I was reading the staff report is how are other municipalities, specifically our neighbor cities, addressing the change in the legislation?
I'd be curious to know that.
I'm not sure about Bellevue. I think Redmond's going through that process right now and looking at a variety of options. Some cities have prohibited them. Some have been more flexible. So it's a wide variety across this area, the east side and the state for that matter. So I think we had done some research previously, but I'm not sure
what that lately. Yeah, Bellevue just took action. Do you recall, Eric, that email from Bellevue? I'm not sure what the how they incorporated this change. So we can look into that.
Yeah, Mr. Miller?
When this first came to the Planning Commission a couple years ago when marijuana was initially legalized, you know, we were setting up big buffers, 1,000-foot buffers, and I remember that there was quite a bit of citizen opposition to particularly a store that was being proposed to be located up on Market Street, and we added the regulation to keep marijuana stores, I don't think it was 1,000 feet, but some distance away from walking or school walk routes.
Yeah. Adjacent to
all of those still apply. Still.
Yeah, no, I know they still apply. But I know that the council, one of the things that the council is looking at is that the city overwhelmingly voted in favor of legalizing pot. And I think that what they're looking at is trying to make sure that it's available in the city. The other aspect of this, I believe, is the state changed or is merging the regulations between medical marijuana and
that's correct
regular marijuana. And because of that, I think that they also have an interest in loosening up some of the regulations and getting more sites. That being said, I'm quite frankly kind of ambivalent to whether it's 1,000 feet or 100 feet. You know, it's, I don't really care.
Shame.
It's honest.
Kind of mellow about that, I think.
So, I guess you're looking for some level of direction from us tonight.
So that we have something to go, kind of a recommendation right. to go into the public hearing with.
Yeah.
And we've heard some comments about checking other cities, what's going on there, kind of looking at the daycare definition. Perhaps here somewhat in the middle ground, 100 may be a little bit too much, but I've heard a couple of comments someplace in that range but anyway. So.
Mr. Miller?
I would suggest, to move us off the dead center here, moving the regulations to 100 feet and doing what Rick suggested, and that's sending out notifications to people that live within, say, 500 feet, which is your normal mailing list, I think.
Or 300 feet.
300 is
typical. Oh, 300?
Mm-hmm. So, whatever.
300 then, whatever. But within 300 feet of the parcels that would be added if we dropped to 200 feet.
If we dropped to 200 feet.
If we drop it to 100 feet, and we send out a mailing list to everybody within 300 feet of
that,
and see what kind of response we get.
Would it be that much more to make it 500 feet, just to err on the side of? I don't know. I just want to make sure that you. I don't want to have people coming back saying, "I didn't know about this," and if I'd known, you know how that works. You know, I'd rather see you. Go overboard in trying to reach out to people than not.
Well, we have a third option, which is the reducing the buffer to the different. I mean, would that, if we discussed that, would we move away from this 100 feet next to daycares and just entertain talking about the industrial areas and commercial areas?
I think the idea would be that it would still be changing the buffer for daycares, but it would only apply within industrial. Areas. Do I have that correct?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Are you talking about the second option?
Option number three, I thought.
Number three. Yeah, you could reduce it to anywhere between 1,000 and 100, right. And it could be one level in commercial, one level in industrial.
But we're still talking about the buffer from daycares.
Yes.
But that would still include the 100 buffer for daycare?
Not necessarily. not necessarily.
No,
I mean,
okay.
You could discuss that, select something that you're comfortable with, but it could be different in commercial areas from.
If I could interject here a little bit, since we are in the process of working through this, going to a public hearing, and since the council really directed us to look at the 100 feet, I think it would be appropriate to at least bring to the hearing the 100 feet.
Yeah.
So that regardless of what you recommend, we have the ability to take to the council what they asked us to look at. So I would just hate to preclude that in the long run.
It's very sage.
I agree.
Well, I was going to say something before Eric said that.
Well, then don't.
Eric didn't say that. The notices that go out for construction and whatever in our city are 300 feet. And that is not very far. I feel that we should have at least a 400-foot buffer around daycares. I mean, some of those kids can get out, move around. And those marijuana places are going to have more car traffic than maybe some place that doesn't have it. You know, they'll have people coming in and out. Anyway, that's my opinion. I think 400 is a good place.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I also heard 500.
Yeah,
I saw a lot of, when Mike had his proposal, I saw a lot of head nods. Is everyone, I guess it was Mike and Rick's proposal.
Yeah, and the question is whether it's 300, 400, 500, and
100
I'm saying I'd
to
rather
the
see
public
Aaron.
Hearing and as the proposal and do some level of notification, whether it's I guess our normal 300 feet.
Pretty
everyone.
Typical, any land use decisions or rezones, things like that.
It's a little different.
Well, you might also look at it that if the buffer is 100 feet from a daycare, go out to that buffer and then 300 feet from that.
Remember, what I was suggesting is you take the parcels that have been added and we drop the buffer down to 1,000 or down to 100 feet.
Right.
Yeah, that's
and then you take 300 feet outside of those parcels.
Yeah, same thing. Yep.
Yeah. That's my understanding, too.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I'd prefer 400 to 600, but I'm fine with Mike's proposal. I mean, we're not making a recommendation tonight. I'm fine doing that.
If I could add one other thing I'd like to hear back from staff on is, I was trying to find this today, what the rationale was by the state for dropping it from 1,000 to 100. I think it's just to open up more spots. And then furthermore, what is the rationale for having any buffer around? And maybe there is no answer to that, but if you know of one, that'd be great.
Well, I think the rationale, like Mike mentioned earlier about there's now the merging for medical marijuana and retail marijuana, so provide more flexibility for that. That's why the increase of licenses. The numbers, that's probably
just
a judgment
call. Daycares is
right.
A blunt tool.
1,000 feet came out of the 502, and there's been a lot of talk about how that works and whether that has enough land area for licenses or not. So,
okay. Ms. Cullen?
Yeah, I just want to make a planning commission joke that they wanted the marijuana buffers to match the wetland and the stream buffers.
Right, also, it's increasing.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I'm not sure that's native vegetation or not.
Yeah, right.
See, we got a little mileage out of that.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything to add to this? Great. Do we give you enough direction for tonight?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
thank you.
And we'll bring back responses to the questions we heard.
Okay, great. All right, moving on to the second item on our agenda tonight, a public hearing on amendments to the wireless and utility regulations.
And Mr. Chair.
Oh, if. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, and for those in the audience, if anybody is wanting to make comment tonight, I think we have a separate sign-in sheet for public comment on our public hearing.
Good evening. Jeremy McMahon with the City of Kirkland Department of Planning and Building, and Allison Zeich, planner with the Planning and Building, also here to talk about some miscellaneous zoning code amendments related to the wireless service facilities and utilities. It should look a little familiar to those longer-standing members. We talked about this earlier in the year, brought you an overview of the changes we'd come back with, and tonight we're here for the public hearing for the actual code amendments. Two different sources for these. On the wireless, the main initiative is that the federal government passed the middle income tax relief bill in 2012, and in 2015 the FCC adopted the rules of how that was to be administered. And a lot of this is preemptive of local authority. So as a practical matter, we have been regulating these this way since 2015. And the goals of the government were to eliminate barriers to getting wireless facilities spread across the landscape and providing the service. I think there are areas where it's been more difficult to permit. We really haven't had that many conflicts with the industry in Kirkland, but I think this is probably, as Colleen mentioned last time, born out of places where it is more difficult to get these permitted. The rules also impose tighter time frames on how we do it, and as I mentioned before, we don't have a lot of choice in much of it because our authority is superseded by this federal preemption. While we're into Chapter 117, which is where our wireless regulations live, we've taken the opportunity to do a number of other cleanup amendments, so Allison will walk you through those also, and we outline them in the memo. We grouped into this some amendments to our utilities that we need to do, our utility regulations. We noticed that if you're running a linear corridor like a power line through multiple zones, the way we do regulations in Kirkland is each zone has a different process for how it's regulated. So it's odd where you have improvement that crosses multiple zones because you have a bunch of different authorities that are involved. We try to consolidate that so there's just one review if you're running a line through multiple zones. There's also new comprehensive plan language that talks about requiring a siting analysis for these kinds of facilities. So we've incorporated some of that in, and I'll go over the details on that in a minute also. So Allison will talk about the wireless regulations.
So to quickly go over a little bit more about the FCC's new regulations, they do two main things. The first thing that they did was tell us what a substantial change is, and this would be a substantial change to an existing facility. So they gave us some thresholds of when they would consider a change to a wireless facility substantial and when they would not consider it substantial. The second part of what they did gets into what we do with a facility or how we review a modification to a facility if the change proposed is not substantial. The three things that we have to do when we review these changes that aren't substantial is we have to review them within a certain time period, that's 60 days. At the end of 60 days, if an applicant requests in writing, hey, it's been 60 days, you haven't approved it yet, we have to deem it approved whether we've reviewed it or not. And it also took away some of the aesthetic considerations that we have in our code and took away things like limits on the number of antennas. Those things will still be limited by if they are a substantial change, but if those changes, if they're adding new antennas and they're not a substantial change, we'll have to approve them. To go over a summary of the changes we've made or proposed in the code, the major group of changes that we proposed are in regards to the Spectrum Act. So what we did was last year when these went into effect in April, we had to move a little quicker than we could amend the code, and we implemented a process that we call eligible facility modifications. So that's our Spectrum Act review, is an eligible facility modification. It's a slightly different review process because it's quicker and we can't regulate some of the things we were regulating before in Chapter 117. We processed 40 of them in between April of last year and this year. And like I said, some of them did allow dimensional, it allowed them to exceed the dimensional standards that we have in our code. We have an example up here and also in your packets. You see at the top photo is an existing facility where our code before would have required those antennas to be mounted no higher than an existing rooftop appurtenance. This proposal was to extend the height of those antennas above the existing appurtenance. That was within the threshold. It was not considered a substantial change per the FCC regulations, and so we had to approve it, and we did. Most of the 40 that we processed in the first year were fairly simple, though. The majority of them were simple antenna swaps and didn't even change the dimensions. So we added that process into the code, into our review process section. We added new definitions in the code to clarify some of the terminology we're using when we talk about that eligible facility modification review. And also codified the substantial change criteria into our own code. The second group of recommendations are those of the general nature. Many of them focus on sort of simplifying existing processes. The first one was to remove the existing pre-submittal meeting requirement for planning official decisions. We are also proposing to simplify the dimensional standards for rooftop equipment, so ancillary equipment for a wireless facility if it's mounted on a rooftop. We're now proposing that those equipment structures on rooftops be subject to the rooftop appurtenance section of Chapter 115. We're also looking to simplify the process to review replacement utility poles. So you can see on page 13 of your memo shows the changes that we're proposing for the review of replacement utility poles. We've increased the diameter threshold of replacement utility poles that can be reviewed under a planning official decision. And then we've also done some general reorganization of our review process sections for clarification, as well as adding language to codify our review of small cell networks. Small cell networks are another definition that we've added. They're on page 9. The definition for those are on page 9 of your memo. And essentially, those would be smaller antennas spread out over a geographic area. Rather than have a pole with a bunch of antennas on it that are this big, small cell, to oversimplify, a small cell network might involve singular antennas that are smaller in nature that would service downtown, something like that. So we propose to implement those into our code and review them as one permit for a network rather than require one individual permit for each antenna. And we can answer questions on that if you have any. Lastly, we received a letter from representatives of the AT&T today, and we provided you with a copy of that letter if you didn't receive it via email. And they had a couple minor suggestions regarding mainly some clarification of terminology. There were two specifically that are included in the letter on the second page. Staff agrees with these suggestions. They don't change the content. They clarify, which I think was what AT&T was recommending. And we also had a conversation that didn't make it into AT&T's letter or into the amendments that we've proposed, talking about the possibility of reviewing any utility pole replacement that is a like-for-like replacement, so not increasing the height nor the diameter of a utility pole. We've had some conversations about reducing the review process for that to a planning official decision if it's not increasing the height or the diameter of that pole. Staff feels that that's reasonable, and if the Planning Commissioner Houghton Community Council agreed, we could possibly incorporate that into a recommendation to City Council.
going to ask questions on that, or just have a couple more slides on the utilities and then questions after that?
This works.
Okay. So for utilities, we have a number of recommendations included towards the back of your packet. And we've done a number of things here. One, we came across an issue with the, you may recall, the hazardous liquid pipeline regulations that we took through a couple years ago, which was dealing mostly with the Olympic pipeline as it runs through Kirkland as a result of some bad things that have happened elsewhere. Most cities in Washington have tightened up how we regulate those. One of the things that's included in there is it precludes high consequence land uses from being in there. So like fire stations and schools and utilities is grouped in that somewhat. But we wanted to clarify that if a utility can be co-located or cross the pipeline corridor, which they kind of often will have to, as long as they have system redundancy. So the idea of a high consequence land use is if an earthquake happens or something, these are services you really need to keep up and running, as opposed to them being down for an extended period of time as a result of a pipeline rupture or something like that. We've clarified in the code that if there's system redundancies built into it, it's really not a high consequence land use. So for example, with electrical power, there are alternatives and ways to switch it. So if one segment of a line goes out, like a 115 kV line goes out, there's a way to deal with that. So we didn't want to prohibit those outright because I'm not sure it's possible to really prohibit them outright and provide the service. So just a simple clarification we threw in. We put in a new definition for public utilities that are electrical transmission lines, and these are the high voltage ones, the 115 kV, which is what we're talking about now with the Sammamish to Juanita project, or the 230 kV line, which is the Energize East Side project, as opposed to just the local lines that we see on a day-in, day-out basis. So then we've adopted regulations in Chapter 115. Once we've defined that of how we regulate it, we've set up some better criteria as recommended in the comprehensive plan for that the hearing examiner would have to make decisions on these matters. And key to that is that there's a siting and design analysis required of the utility provider. So they help us understand how they picked that route, what they've done to mitigate the facilities and minimize the impacts of the facility. We did go to a standardized process 2A if you're building one of these in Kirkland, but we retained existing language. If one of these facilities is in Houghton jurisdiction, it gets kicked up to process 2B. So we retain that it's 2B in Houghton and 2A elsewhere.
Jeremy?
Yes.
The way it's worded on your sheet in here on page 3, underneath 3A, we would still hold the hearing, send our recommendation to the City Council, right? And then they would, in turn, come back and we have our veto vote if we wish.
Exactly.
Just like normal?
Just like normal. You'd have
just
a joint hearing.
It isn't very clear there where it says City Council right at the end of that.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it would be hearing, if it's just a 2A, it's just hearing examiner recommendation or a hearing examiner decision appeals to council.
Yeah.
If it's 2B, you typically have a joint hearing with the hearing examiner, make a recommendation at that point. Council makes their decision on the recommendation, but then it comes back to Houghton for the disapproval jurisdiction.
I was pretty sure that's what it's going to be, but I just...
Yep.
Sometimes if you don't ask the questions, you find out later, you should have.
You're exactly right. So that's everything, and as noted here, well, thank you, Elsie. On this, it's we'll look for your recommendations tonight. Take it for adoption by City Council, and then it would come back to Houghton for your final review at some point in the future.
Before we get into any discussion, I think we'll take public comment, so we have the benefit of that. I think, could somebody hand me the sign-in sheet? Okay. First on the sign-in sheet is Kim Allen.
Good evening, Chair Laliberte and commissioners. My name is Kim Allen. I'm with the Bush Law Firm. I represent AT&T. Thank you for your consideration of the amendments before you. I'd like to begin by thanking your staff for a very collaborative process here. I think that it was well characterized that the greater proportion of these regulations before you are as a result of a federal regulation that was directed at communities very unlike Kirkland that had a process. When we wanted to swap antennas to upgrade technology, we ended up going through full-blown CUP processes just to keep changing on antennas. And just for a frame of reference, we're doing that probably about every 18 months as we take technology from 2G to 3G to 4G to LTE. We're trying to keep up with an enormous demand in the industry. Since the advent of the smartphone, we have seen a 100,000% increase in demand for service. So we are running ahead of a really big dog here. And so the FCC and the feds gave us some regulations that will ensure that we can have a cleaner process and a faster process to be able to push those upgrades out so that we can serve the members of your community who live and work in Kirkland and other places as efficiently as we can. I think that Allison covered very well the changes. One thing I would note is that the Kirkland was an early adopter of the federal regulations. They structured a process to process those minor modifications, and that process was so impressive that I know that my firm, we work all over the West Coast and all over the country, quite frankly, and the first thing we offer to jurisdictions that are looking to develop a process is the Kirkland model. So I just want to thank staff for facilitating this. I think that my letter touches on very few things. We're by and large here to answer any questions that you have about either the code regulations that are being proposed or the industry itself or any other wireless questions. I know this isn't something that comes across your plate every day. And so I also have with me Carol Tagayan, who is a representative of AT&T, who can also is also available to answer questions. With respect to the one change that Allison referenced that didn't quite make it into either my letter, there were conversations going on all day, or the staff proposal, dealing with replacement utility poles. You know, oftentimes we put our antennas on utility poles to avoid building a new tower. It's a verticality that's already there. It makes sense to put our stuff on there too. But oftentimes when we go and we add antennas, we need to replace the pole because we're adding to the load. Poles are old, they're wood. And so what we're proposing, what Allison was describing, is to be able to replace like-for-like poles. If we're not adding diameter or adding height, to be able to replace those poles with just a planning director decision as opposed to a 2A process. So we've advocated for that. It's a win-win for everybody in a lot of ways because the pole replacement guarantees that the facility is strong enough to handle the additional load. Oftentimes, we work in tandem with PSE to use their poles, and oftentimes they're the ones that are certainly telling us, well, you're going to need to buy us a new pole if you want to put some antennas up there. So a streamlined process to be able to do that is very helpful, and we appreciate staff surfacing this as an issue. With that, I will step down or be available for any questions that you might have as you go through your deliberations.
Thank you so much, Ms. Allen. Next on our list, we have Carrie Kreiner from Puget Sound Energy.
Good evening, Planning Commissioners and Houghton Community Council members. My name is Carrie Kreiner, and I'm a land planner with Puget Sound Energy, and I just want to speak to the proposed utility changes that Jeremy spoke about. PSE is fully in support of these changes, and we appreciate the thoughtful code that Jeremy presented and the collaborative effort that went into drafting those regulations. I just wanted to kind of give you an overview of how these regulations will be applied in the future. Currently, we have one proposed project that Jeremy spoke about, the Sammamish to Juanita 115 line that will go between Sammamish Substation in Redmond and your Juanita Substation in Kirkland. And that will be probably submitting permits in the next few months for that. So that's kind of our current proposal. There's also the Energize Eastside project, which currently is not proposed to go through Kirkland, but you know, we don't feel it will end up there, but the option's still being left open. But in terms of future projects in the 10 to 20 year horizon, we have two additional 115 projects proposed, one that will go from the Juanita substation up north to Kenmore to our Moreland substation, and then another one that will go from Sammamish substation in Redmond to a proposed new substation in Vernell, which is in Bellevue. So as Kimberly said, you know, these type of projects you don't see every day. So just, you know, if you have any questions, please let me know.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Is there anyone else in the audience who did not have the opportunity to sign in who would like to give public comment for our public hearing on this issue? Okay, in that case, we will close the public hearing. Do I have that right? Great. Before we go any further, I think Ms. Cullen has something.
AT&T is my employer, and as a result, and to prevent any perception of conflict of interest, I'm going to recuse myself from discussion on this topic. So if someone will come out and get me when we're done, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see here. Anyone have any questions for staff or you have some?
Yes. Jeremy, I'm curious. What wireless regs changes that are being proposed are not federally mandated? That are of any significance?
These are the more general ones. So
those are not requiring federal?
These are not. Well,
they're not required.
The first one kind of is because of the shot clock issue, so not having a pre-submittal meeting for planning official decision. So rather than just do that for the eligible modifications, we don't really need them, and the industry doesn't really need a pre-submittal meeting for that.
Okay.
The rooftop equipment standards, right now our code is more than a little confusing about what kind of wireless accessory structures, equipment structures you can put on a roof. So we started down the path of trying to make up more specific rules for that. And we said, wait a minute, we already have rules in 115 that deal with what you can put on a roof. And if we just say this is one of the things you can put on a roof subject to those same rules.
Okay.
So it's not additive, it's part of what's already allowed.
Fair.
So that we've put in as a clarification. We talked about utility pole replacement quite a bit. We proposed downgrading that anyway for smaller poles. And then we agree with AT&T about the like for like. Where we've done, the main difference is the public notice. Where we've done public notice, and certainly we've done very few public hearings for wireless facilities, there really isn't any public comment. So it's a lot of extra. To get essentially to replace what's already there, it doesn't look much different from what's there. It's a lot of extra process that doesn't seem to be helpful. Okay. And then a lot of it is just trying to consolidate to make it easier to read for staff and for the industry of what permit do I need, how big can it be, how tall can it be, to try to simplify that. Do you need anything else?
The small cell. Addition of the small cell language isn't mandated, but we've had that request from several industry representatives.
Okay.
And then main difference, as Allison noted, is right now the code would imply that each of those small cell antennas would go through a separate process. So it's just saying if you're building a network, we'll take them through the process at the same time.
Makes sense.
And small cell and small cell network, same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
So really, unless we have an issue with that, there's really nothing to discuss.
I'd like to make a comment.
To be practical.
I think the staff did a wonderful job. This was easy to read, and I've had experience reading these things before, and I think you did an excellent job.
Just for clarification, Jeremy, because you made a side statement about cabinets, but when you say rooftop equipment, that includes the antennas as well as?
No. When we talk about equipment for the associated with the wireless facility, it's really that's regulated differently than the antenna arrays.
That's what I wondered. Yeah, that's
to be backup battery.
Circuit cabinets and stuff like that, yeah.
So there are times when, for whatever reasons, we ask that maybe HVAC equipment be placed not on the roof because of view corridors or something like that. And so the equipment box for this could be very much as big as a HVAC equipment box, but we would not have the option of moving that.
The beauty of regulating in 115 is under the same rules is you get the same benefits for doing it. So, for example, 115, the rooftop, if you can put it in a parking garage, then it won't hold you accountable for that lost parking stall, for example. So there are incentives already built into 115, which I think you're mentioning, that encourage alternatives. And so by just using those same regulations for these equipment structures, it is just regulating the same way that we do regulate those right now. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that a wireless equipment box could go down in the basement and parking garage?
Mr. Kaplan.
A couple of comments during your discussion about the like-for-like. I think that makes perfect sense. However, I'm now questioning the like-for-like plus additional equipment and or antennas on top of the pole. So the equipment and antennas on top of the pole would be go through the process, but the like for like would be an expedited process for the pole itself. Or are we talking about the bundle of the like for like pole plus the antenna and equipment that's on top of the new pole? I'm confused.
So let me separate that out a little bit. So first, if you are replacing your utility pole, that is not eligible for the Spectrum Act review, or what we call here eligible facility review. So if someone was proposing to replace the utility pole, they wouldn't be eligible for that 60-day shot clock review that we have here. So in that case, if they were proposing to replace the utility pole, they would be subject to whatever review process we put forth in our table in 117.40, I think. So if they're replacing the utility pole and they're subject to one of the existing processes, not the eligible facility modification, they are subject to the dimensional standards that we currently have in the code that limit the height per the standard section.
So let me pile on with the question. On page 19, you talk about the setbacks, and then in page 20, it talks about some of these dimensional standards, and that's the place where it jumped out at me. Are those the dimensional standards you're talking about?
Those are the dimensional standards in the sections that we added under the height sections are to recognize that if a modification is eligible for an eligible facility modification review, that expedited review, they can exceed the existing dimensional standards in our code because we have to approve them.
Right.
But not
as part of the federal statute.
Right.
But not for the replacement utility pole. The replacement utility pole is not covered by the federal statute. So that that's just subject to the height rules that would apply right now.
Okay. Well, I think with that said, then I would be in favor of the like-for-like replacement. That's easy. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So I think you probably want Houghton Community Council to take action first and then Planning Commission.
I would entertain a motion from Community Council member to approve the staff recommendation.
I think if you're fine with the staff recommendation, what staff would also recommend is that you agree with the proposed editorial comments in the Bush law firm letter, and that you allow the like-for-like replacement as a planning official decision. And that'll capture everything you're talking
about. Got it.
And the 24-inch diameter, but that was already in the code.
That's the like-for-like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So moved.
Is there a second?
And with the amendment.
Yeah, as Jeremy stated. What he said. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carries.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion from somebody on the Planning Commission.
I would move that we approve the staff recommendation together with the like-for-like replacement, together with the minor modifications in the letter from the Bush law firm.
Does anyone want a second?
Second.
Mr. Bagg, first the punch. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. All those in favor of Mr. Miller's motion to adopt staff's recommendations, including the editorial comments in the letter from the Bush law firm and the like-for-like process. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed? Okay. Passes unanimously.
It's been great.
Okay.
Can we take a break? And
yeah, I guess we'll take a 10-minute break. We'll get the folks outside.
Adjourn this meeting? And
yeah, we'll adjourn the meeting, the joint meeting. And we'll take a few-minute break and be back with the Planning Commission meeting for tonight.
Still trying to put together something this